everybody, and welcome back to the Enterprise Dish. We are steamrolling towards Ignite, but before we get there, we're going to have a little chat with Mr. Aaron Suzuki, who is, well, you're still in the Seattle, I was going to say once again in the Seattle area, but you haven't left the Seattle area, although you are going to be leaving soon to head to Orlando, if I'm correct.
Oh, yes. Can't wait. I mean, it's a good time to leave Seattle, though, because it has been storming torrentially here.
Really?
We have our first moments of sunshine here in 7 days or more, at least. So we welcome the sun, but I also welcome a little business travel.
Yeah.
I don't mind getting out on the road. So
that has got to be your flight from Seattle to Orlando. Has got to be one of the longest probably flights in the continental U.S. without leaving the mainland. How long do you have, first off, is it a direct, and how long of a flight is that?
I think you can find nonstops. I do not happen to be on one.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm not sure as I think about it. Either they were all sold out by the time I booked, mm-hmm. or there simply aren't any. It's so much easier on this side of the continent to just do California than it is to go to Florida, especially if you're interested in doing the Disney thing or whatever.
That's what I was thinking. Exactly.
Right.
If you're going to go to Disney, you go to Florida.
Yeah,
or California, I should say.
Yeah, or Orange County is pretty easy and short from here versus Orlando, which is a full day of travel and three time zones. So I mean, it is not a trivial undertaking. And the thing about it is, I know that a lot of people come from literally all over the world to attend Ignite. Although I also know that there are other little mini Ignites in Europe and Asia all over. So maybe not as much this year, but oh man, it is. It's at least as far for me as it would be someone in Central America or South America. I mean, it is far. I think that my total travel time will be something like 9 hours or something.
That puts it, like, I can get to Paris in about 7.
Yeah. I mean, part of that is I got to stop in Atlanta or something, but you know, if it was nonstop, it would probably be 5.5, I would say, which is still a pretty long flight, just over one country, you know. And we talked, I think, in the previous maybe one or two podcasts before about flying to Europe and, you know, amazing, you can go so far so fast. But, you know, in the U.S., you fly very, very far just to get across the country, where, you know, in most of Europe, you don't really fly to other destinations within the country. If you fly anywhere, it's to another country. It's kind of funny, but it'll be great. It's going to be a big event. I mean, I think that's for sure. There's so much going on, so much of this news about hardware, so much that I actually had to print out some notes, and I actually drafted like a matrix of some of these details because there's so much to talk about. I mean, maybe it's all straight in your head. I don't know. You're a little bit younger than me, I think, Brad, but there's a lot going on, right? There's a lot to digest, which I think is going to make the event that much richer as well, because there's so much going on, so many announcements that either just happened or will happen, that it's going to be good.
Yeah, there's, I think they said approximately 40,000 of our closest friends will be joining us down in Orlando.
40,000.
I think that's what they said. This is by far their biggest IT pro show of the year. For us, for Petri, it's our biggest show as well, because these are all the people that we hope are reading our website, and we're trying to get our name out there as much. So it's a big event for us. It's a big event for everybody who's going. And then Microsoft has had a busy month in general. They kicked off the month with a hardware event where I've got one of the devices, not the Surface Pro X. That's not out yet, but the new Surface laptop here. This is the 3, which it looks like it's covered in Vanta Black, if you're familiar with that material, because it like absorbs every single ray of light. It's actually a bit hard to see, but that guy is out. They announced a Surface Pro X, which is running a brand new version of Windows, which I'm curious on your take about Microsoft launching another SKU of Windows called Windows 10X, but then they announced a piece of hardware called Surface Pro X, which doesn't run Windows 10X.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we love this. We love this, that there is, you know, so now not only do we have multiple flavors of Windows, we have multiple flavors of Surface devices that, and one named X that doesn't run the Windows operating system called X.
Yep.
So it's all very confusing. Lots to consider. Windows for ARM is not new. I mean, to just dive in.
Yep.
Windows for ARM is not a new thing. It's been around in various iterations for some time.
Yep.
Varying degrees of failure, perhaps, with past versions of it, right? In fairness, I mean that in a nice way. The Surface Pro X is interesting, though, because I think our take is that Microsoft is realizing what Apple has done really, really well, which is, hey, there's a class of device that needs a lighter weight operating system that can be charged via USB and deliver sort of this convenience that consumers expect. Does that preclude it from being an enterprise device? No. I mean, look at all the people who use iPhones for work and use iPads at work and all that. But it is not going to be managed in the same way. Moreover, we did our digging, of course, on Win 10X, which of course is not going to be the Surface Pro X, but in so doing, realized that the latest incarnation of Windows for ARM is only going to be deployable or manageable via Intune. So that's a very, very important consideration. It's footnote 6. It's buried. You've got to really dig into these release notes and all the blogs and everything to get to this insight that, you know, there's going to be a different manageability model. And is this perhaps the way that Microsoft is thinking about the future, or is this just sort of the way that, you know, you, the difference between the way you manage an iOS device versus an OS X device or Mac OS device? You know, and that's sort of our take. We don't envision a future, and I think, you know, and this is, you know, of course our bias because we make a product like this, but this has been corroborated with others who are, you know, Windows MVPs and SCCM MVPs who have no bias, who don't care, who do lots of Intune and all the stuff, but don't necessarily see a future where you operate without Active Directory and without sort of image-based manageability. But I wonder too if this isn't just sort of another sort of market test, in a sense that this is Microsoft saying, well, this is how other organizations have done it. Consider the Chromebook as well. Why shouldn't we get more serious about the way that we're creating and manufacturing hardware and manage our operating systems to the device to maximize the usability of the device? And then we'll play manageability into that. Not necessarily as an afterthought, but, you know, to map to the device and its qualities. So I think that's really important that people know that if you rush out with excitement to get a Surface Pro X, not only are you making a lot of potential trade-offs in terms of what it's capable of doing, the very kind of core platform you're buying is not a traditional Windows platform.
Sure.
Right? That's very important to know, number one. And number two, that there are a lot of potential manageability trade-offs. So we're sort of worried that, our customers are going to start showing up saying, hey, give me the drivers for this. Well, we might be able to pull them off of it, but it's not the same enchilada. It's a very different enchilada, and there is not a lot today that we can do with that device.
Yeah, I think there's so many unknowns as this hardware, and well, the hardware will be out soon, but the maturity of Windows 10X is going to be interesting, as well as the maturity of Windows on ARM. To your point, this is, I believe, the third iteration of when they're serious about launching it this time, and you know, will it stick around? I think they've got a better enchilada here, potentially, if you will. It's fascinating, though. It's fascinating to watch the most valued company in the world try to get back into this market for a third time.
It is funny. I agree. We counted three shots at this Windows on ARM thing as well. Microsoft, because they're so valuable, can afford to do this, right? They can afford to say, yeah, we need to make another run at this. The question will be adoption. And is this device really going to be that desirable? And, you know, a couple of the guys I was talking with on our team internally said, hey, you roll into Costco and you have, you know, a Surface Pro X sitting next to a, you know, Surface Laptop 3, and you kind of start looking at what you want. You're not thinking about in terms of enterprise manageability. So the question, my first question was, is this a consumer targeted device or an enterprise targeted device? And it would appear that it's more consumer targeted, right? Will that play up into the enterprise? Possibly, maybe, but probably more at a BYOD level. And so what will you be doing? Will you be putting Citrix Receiver on it and doing everything via remote? Will you be streaming apps to it? Will you only be doing basic, you know, accessing? And this, they even talked about this, I think, in the release, that this is sort of a device created for a future state where you're mostly doing kind of workflow-based apps that maybe are primarily web-based. And so it may not require kind of the horsepower of a traditional device. Mm-hmm. That certainly precludes a lot of us who expect a lot from our devices and how they run locally. But for a lot of people, you know, the road warrior salesperson who lives out of CRM and Outlook, mm-hmm. it might be more than enough, right? Good battery life, can, you know, plug it right into the USB in your in-seat entertainment system and not worry about whether or not you got power down by your feet. You know, all those things really might make it a game changer. We don't know. In a way, we hope it does, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like this needs to go. It needs to go for Microsoft. As a fan and a friend of the company, I feel like it would be really great to see their hardware strategy take off and see this get traction. But it's a bit of a head scratcher. Part of it is also this secured core business, right? I don't know. Did you read much about that as well, Brad?
They announced that a couple days ago, actually, where they're partnering up with people about. It kind of reminds me of some of their previous security initiatives in the Windows world. But yeah, it's them linking up with partners, talking about increasing the firmware protections, and pitching a new product,
and so it kind of begs a question as well of, okay, they're solving a specific problem with that, mm-hmm. that's good, that's fine. They have collaborated very closely and worked very hard, especially with Qualcomm on it, that's good. It's also in Intel chips, we know that as well. We happen to have got one here in our office the other day, great. But what happens when that's compromised, right? I mean, these compromises can still exist. And then do we go back to sort of a Meltdown Spectre kind of situation where now we're writing additional software to overcome the hardware deficiencies, mm-hmm. And now we're giving up some performance of the device? There are some open questions for me, but I think that it is at least evidence of an effort to try to improve the security in a way that improves sort of this trust relationship and obviates sort of the risk of firmware compromise, at least at that level. But it also speaks to how serious they are about their hardware strategy, right? They're really putting a lot into this and trying to make it go. So we're at a very, very interesting inflection point. And I think one of the things that I'm going to be looking for in Orlando is, you know, what is the narrative around this? How do the devices really feel? I was looking very closely as you were holding up the device you have to see, all right, is it like the other Surface laptops where when you type, because it's so lightweight, does it make the screen jiggle, and that ultra shiny screen jiggling just makes our heads explode, right? So
especially when you have turbulence in the back of a plane, that is when you notice.
Which,
so it's
right, which never happens.
Yeah, I wish.
That's sort of the perspective is, all right, there are some interesting moves being made. The other note I have in this hasty matrix I built out is the Surface Pro 7, the 15-inch version, I believe is AMD only. So
yeah,
what
so
does there's that an, say, right? I mean,
there's an interesting aspect to the 15-inch version, which that's what this is, the AMD model. If you are a business customer, and I don't know what this says about AMD, you actually get the Intel version, but only for business customers. So if you walk into a Microsoft store and buy a 15-inch Surface Laptop 3, it's AMD. If you order it through your partner channel, you have the option, and I don't make qualify that. I believe it might only be the Intel option for business customers. I can't remember if they have AMD. So it's really awkward from that aspect, because it's like, okay, what are they saying about AMD? It's not good enough for business, but it's good enough for consumer.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
It's a little odd.
Yeah, this is that's news to me. And if that's accurate, you know, I'm just trying to think as fast as I can here, what the rationale for that would be, aside from you know, potentially a savvy deal that Microsoft cut with AMD and Intel, and you know, they have some rationalization around that. It might, is it a vPro thing? Is it a, you know, who knows what? That's really, really interesting.
So here's my crazy theory on this one. Here's my crazy one. I knew that Microsoft wanted to diversify their chips from Intel, but I don't know if that's why this one's in here. This is my crazy theory about why Microsoft shipped one, aside from wanting to have an AMD option. My guess here is Microsoft is working with AMD very, very closely for their next generation Xbox. And AMD is building that for whatever, for they're building the GPU and the chip. They're also doing it for Sony. But my guess here is that they probably struck a deal with AMD to get better pricing or maybe better performance if they would ship a product that ran AMD outside of the Xbox family. That is my conspiracy theory put on your tinfoil hat as to why we have this thing.
I like it. I like it. There's some logic to that. And I think that they're able to quantify, you know, what that consumer segment represents in terms of volume and also what the enterprise segment represents in terms of volume now for these devices.
Yep.
So I'm sure that they could, you know, on some level, basically give some kind of guarantee or even pre-buy a certain volume of chips.
Yep.
You know, there might be a supportability piece here. There might be a warranty piece here. And the behavior of consumers versus the enterprise plays very differently on both of those things. So yeah, I think there's probably at least some truth to that, you know, potentially crazy theory. And another thing maybe to try to squeeze some intel out of no pun intended, out of folks at Orlando around some of this action.
There's more to the, I strongly believe that there's more to the story than we just wanted to ship an AMD product. There was something that went on that triggered them to initiate that product line in the way that they did. Because if they truly thought that AMD had a superior product, then it would be in the business one more than likely, because I don't think they're shipping a vPro version currently of the Surface Laptop 3. So.
Yeah. I mean, that is interesting. That is interesting. And it makes me think that there are, and of course, I mean, this is Microsoft, so everything is, you know, down to the screw head, down to the millimeter, including the business strategy and partner strategies. I'm sure you're right. There is some rhyme and reason behind all of this and how all of that squares with, you know, what's in it for us.
Right.
Right. I mean, that's what we think about. My world is thinking about our customers and what they're going to need and their adoption behavior around this and a sort of a pluralistic Windows future, which is what it looks like is coming here. If it plays out like, you know, Apple has, okay, that's fairly rational and reasonable. If it turns into somewhat of a rat's nest, that's, you know, it becomes a really complicating thing and poses some challenges, potentially opportunities for us as well. It's an interesting crossroads. I think my takeaway, Brad, is that we're at an inflection point.
Yeah.
In all of this, right? It's interesting. Very, very interesting.
Yep. Other things that are happening in the Windows world, Microsoft officially announced that Windows 10 1909 will be known as the November update, which that build is sort of out now if you're in the right ring. I will caution people that, and Microsoft has a bad habit of this. So they make the announcement post, says, hey, here it comes. We're happy to announce it. And now they have modified that post 3 times. And so you got to keep, especially somebody like yourself, Aaron, your company, I'm sure, is on top of, okay, here's all these modifications. Here's all the caveats that keep being updated as they get closer to shipping this thing. But just know for everybody that you're going to get another big, well, it's a big update compared to like a Patch Tuesday, but there's not a ton of features or anything in this release.
That's right. I mean, I think that for people who are in listen only mode, I am leaning back and smiling and kind of rolling around in my chair right now a little bit, because we were light on update discussion in our last podcast, and that really the last patch release was really sort of a, you know, fixing what happened in the patch prior.
Yep.
So there's sort of this, you know, still a kind of a TikTok behavior, even though it's not truly TikTok in the classic sense of Windows releases, where they're kind of catching up because they're trying to move so fast. And here I think we're seeing this November update happen this way because of that, right? That they've got to kind of clean up, straighten out. The nice thing is there is some literal cleanup for some of us in the sense that they're not shipping as much of this pre-installed store stuff.
Yeah.
Candy Crush is not going to be in the start menu by default. Yeah. Why was it ever there in the first place? You know, there's a lot of those kind of head scratcher things, but yeah, okay, I get it. They, you know, maybe had some deal or, you know, again, these partnership things, but, you know, aside from excluding some of the bloatware, there is not a huge amount of stuff. I feel like maybe they're just trying to tamp everything down nicely ahead of a new actual feature release or make the 2020 wave of updates and patches come into a smoother kind of landing pad, if you will, right? Clear the runway in a sense so that they have a smoother 2020 in terms of updates, because this year was pretty tumultuous.
Yeah.
Right? There was a lot of, hey, wait, don't, and a lot of, you know, oops. And the other thing about all this is that usually these mistakes have been identified, right? It's just that with the previewers, they aren't getting upvoted enough or aren't getting, you know, enough attention to make it a priority for them to fix. And then it gets out in the wild and it's like, oh man, this edge case is a huge issue. And then it's a scramble to fix it, and they're putting on the brakes and laying features back into Windows Update to schedule or postpone and things like that that really would be otherwise unnecessary if this was dialed in. So maybe part of this 1909 business is really trying to create a better 2020 in a sense by cleaning house and you know, making the bed.
Yeah, we will see. They've got some work to do, and they've got, candidly, they've got to prove themselves again. That, I mean, they want everybody to take these things right away, and they want to be aggressive and roll this stuff out, but you'd be crazy to do that, especially at any sort of scale.
Totally agree, and I think that it's really, really easy when there's so much happening so fast in the industry to forget that in the enterprise, there is less excitement is better from IT. You want it to be nice and quiet, right? I'm sure all of our listeners hopefully are listening to this on a commute and smiling and nodding that, yes, my job is to make no news. Yeah. I should not be visible. Nobody should care. I should get my projects done, get a pat on the back from my management chain and keep the drama very, very low. So the notion that IT should be extremely aggressive and bullish with these kinds of potentially risky behaviors, updating operating systems that introduce potential risk into mission critical, business critical applications, installing updates that, you know, pose risk to accessing data. Mm-hmm. Those are not things that become a friend of the IT professional. Those are hostile to the IT professional. Yeah. So again, it goes back to this question of how much testing and experimentation do you do before you roll this out? And, you know, that's a moving target too. There's not an easy answer to any of this.
Yeah, no, if there was, then somebody would be making a lot of money with that easy answer, right? I mean, if I could figure out how to deploy Windows 1909 to 20,000 machines without any hiccups, I'd be doing this podcast from a beach.
Yeah, right. I mean, deploy and potentially roll back is the thing, right? And that's something that we have a lot of conversations about up to and through the webcast that we had yesterday with customers. And the questions were all just about Windows updates. And, you know, it is not easy. There is not an easy answer. But we're working on it. Hopefully we get to that point where we've got a litany of better answers and alternatives for customers. And it could be in the can for next year. We'll see.
To highlight that point perfectly. So right in front of me is a Surface Book 2, and Microsoft had a block not allowing the May update installed because there was an issue. And that is their own, this is hardware that was made downstairs, Windows is upstairs, and it still had its own issues. And this is all first party.
Absolutely, exactly right. And I think that's the other thing about being, you know, the largest, highest value company in the world is, it is like hundreds of mid-sized companies or hundreds of enterprises, right? I mean, these are all billion-dollar plus businesses. These are all very large organizations. So the expectation that everything is going to work perfectly is really unrealistic. And that's something that I think anyone who's gone down this road with Microsoft knows. Again, hopefully people are smiling and nodding in their cars. But that, you know, if you've not tested that, get ready for a ride. The one upside is you've got one throat to choke, and your technical managers, your you know, partners all then have a lot more to lose. There's a lot more at stake. You can hopefully hold them more accountable, but sometimes it backfires really, right? Sometimes it comes back in the form of, hey, good luck getting this much from anybody else, live with it, right? I mean, sometimes it is a little bit of the bully pulpit. So I think we all need, as both users of this technology and managers of this technology, as well as the people who are making recommendations and buy decisions for some of this technology, have a really unfiltered perspective on how this works and what the ramifications of these decisions are, right? Our frustration is that Microsoft releases drivers for their own hardware a really long time after the hardware is in the wild. So customers are asking us for help and we don't have anywhere to turn ourselves. And I think if you went back to Microsoft, I don't know what help they might or might not give you either. Depending on your size, they might try to help you. They might just say, go pound sand. And it's not personal, it's just they can only do so much with millions and millions of customers themselves. So, you know, I think that's where wise decisions about all of these things. Indeed, we're at an inflection point. Yes, this is maybe going to change and influence the way things happen years into the future, but your adoption maybe needs to wait, you know, a year or two or three. And maybe the trial of this technology happens within your team or within your department, or you handpick one group of people who you know, and you probably already have those people, right? Most all of us do, who you trust to be able to pilot some of this, give you good feedback, push it around a little bit in terms of use cases, and say, yeah, this is seeming like a really, really great alternative for us, or get rid of this piece of junk, give me my old HP back, which is kind of my narrative. I'm happier with my control and function keys oriented right where they are, thank you very much, and we'll keep on beating down the road. So I don't know, I wish the answers were simpler, right?
Yeah, unfortunately that's the nature of the beast, right? It's complex, it's not easy, and when it goes wrong, everyone knows real quick, but when it goes right, nobody bats an eye, because
that's right,
it's the whole way it's supposed to be.
That's for better or worse. I mean, and you know, I mean, in fairness, that's how why we all have jobs, right? Is because it's difficult, and the easier we make it, our lives get easier. It gets too easy, then people start asking questions about productivity and can you do more and do we really need to make that next hire? And, you know, on the flip side, if, you know, the Surface Pro X is only manageable via Intune and you're not yet an Intune subscriber, okay, well, what are the implications of this? Here comes another subscription and we've got 10,000 people at $4 a seat. Now you want another $40,000 a year to manage this. I thought we already spent, you know, whatever, $150,000 building out to do this other way and yada, yada, yada. So, yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot of important questions that will have to be answered with this. But, you know, I'm rooting for this new wave of devices. I'm rooting for these kind of variants of Windows and what might happen, because I think what is going to be ushered in is really cloud manageability, right? I mean, that's something we've been excited about and jumping up and down and about. And even that footnote number 6, talking about the new Windows on ARM variant for the Surface Pro X, talks about, you know, moving to the cloud on a time frame relevant to you. So I think they're seeing it as the ultimate destination. But there's some other kind of counterpoints to that too, that maybe would be better for another discussion on another day.
Yep. Well, speaking of a slightly different discussion, Aaron, as we wrap it up here, We have Ignite coming up. There's a lot of first timers. Actually, a question we got, I believe it was last week, was from a reader, or a listener, I should say, who is going to Ignite for the first time and is honestly overwhelmed because there's so much, there's thousands of sessions, there's 40,000 people, there's parties every night. And they were just asking, they said, hey, what is the advice for the first timer going to Ignite? If you have any tried or true tidbits, I'm sure they would love to hear them.
I do. I've got a lot of thoughts. I think my number one advice is don't overindulge on the first couple days. It's easy. There's food and beverages everywhere, and you can totally overdo it. And then that kind of makes it less good in the following days because then you're tired or hungover or bloated or I think it's really about realizing that the expo floor is there all week. All those vendors want to talk to you all week long. The best giveaways of the kind of the bulk giveaways, the t-shirts and the hats and the sunglasses usually go pretty quick. But if you want to have a meaningful conversation, you can have that anytime. If you want to just troll for goodies, go get a bag from the vendor who's giving away bags and hold it out and go trick-or-treating, and that's great. I think that it's really about making a plan, and there are really nice tools to help you do that. If you're a database person, hand pick what you want to learn about most and think about your organization and your strategy and what you want to do and highlight that. It's really important to know that the people who make the products, the people who decide what features to build, the people who manage those people, those are who are at this event. And so if you ever wanted an opportunity to say, why the heck is this way? Or why isn't this yet this way? This is the time and place to do it and really have a listening ear. This is these people's job and part of their mission in attending, even for the Microsoft employees, is in getting this feedback from customers like us. So it's really a great time to be able to voice grievances, share feedback, and even just, you know, get acquainted with some of these people that make the products. They're generally very, very brilliant people who are really motivated to make you happy. And if you're not happy, you know, I mean, it might not be the most pleasant discussion, but they're usually willing to engage that discussion too.
Yep.
So I think just really be prepared to go and have some really compelling discussions with some really fascinating people. But you do have to be somewhat focused and selective. You're not going to get it all. And if you try to, you'll just be overwhelmed. You know, you'll leave and you should leave pretty exhausted, but you can, it's easy to overdo it on every level. So
yeah, it'll be fun.
It's always a good time. Everyone always leaves charged up and goes home, you know, with some inspiration and motivation. Yep. And but we always generally need a little bit of rest after too.
Yeah, very much so, especially coming from, because for a lot of people too, who go to it every year, like myself, like this is where I get to see my friends. I see my, you know, my journalistic friends like 3-4 times a year. And so it's always a good time, and you'll be down there and there'll be some other co-hosts down there. It's a fun gathering of like-minded individuals all trying to do the same thing. And there's going to be 40,000 of us trying to figure it out.
Right, get caught back up in a hurry. And that's a great point. You know, I think that there are a number of people who I haven't seen for a long time that, you know, I probably will see there and that I, you know, don't usually cross paths with. So it's a really neat place to make friendships and reconnect with old friends in ways that you probably wouldn't otherwise.
Absolutely.
So there's a lot of cool things that can happen here. It's great to commiserate with people who have your same job. It's great to learn about maybe other new jobs that you didn't know existed as well, right? So, you know, short of trying to encourage listeners to look for new career opportunities, the world is changing, and it's really interesting to see how you might parlay what you learn at Ignite into poising yourself for a newer evolving role. You know, the world of DevOps is a perfect adjacency for IT professionals, and it is a very, very important, very high value role. It's going to be fun. Yeah, it'll be great. Hopefully we have good weather. I don't know if you're ready.
That's the other thing. It's later than usual, so it should be slightly cooler than 90 degrees Fahrenheit, like it has been the past couple of years. So we will see. We will see. So awesome, Aaron. Well, we very much appreciate you taking your time. This has been a good one. This has been interesting. I learned something new, which is always a good thing. I did not know about the manageability of the new versions of Windows and how that's going to play out. That is going to be, it's always a good day when you learn something new. So to everybody else, thanks for tuning in. You can hit the subscribe buttons down below, and you can find Aaron's information also down below about how to find him on Twitter or at Smart Deploy, or how to reach out, honestly, to hang out at Ignite. Thanks for tuning in, everybody, and we'll catch all of you right back here next time.